Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is John Cozy. Good to have John back. John, it's great to have you back. I've been so focused on what's going on in Gaza, I can barely think of anything else. I'm going to let you talk about your article, but let me just mention to listeners, this all began, well, it didn't all begin, I was going to say it all began on Wednesday. On Wednesday, this is day five of the aggressive attacks. Didn't begin on Wednesday. Began 64 years ago.
Yeah.
this is just the latest ugly business. 64 years ago, and really before 64 years ago, because it began before 1948. Israel's so-called War of Independence began in 1947, and it ended in mid-May 1948. It's been absolute hell for Palestinians ever since. But I checked today, John, since Wednesday, I've written, including two articles to go out tomorrow, I've written eight articles on what's going on in Gaza. My two newest will go out tomorrow. I could write two more today if I had the strength and I had the time. There's so much to talk about, and there's so much that I want to say. But it's frustrating in a lot of ways, John. Every time I check, today was the biggest death toll. The latest count I got about 10 minutes ago was 24 killed today in Gaza. And the number of injured overall since Wednesday is over 550. And there are so many children. I forget the numbers, but so many women and children, and the great majority of the people injured and killed have been civilians, not combatants, not anybody firing anything. These are just innocent people who happen to be in the wrong place. And overnight last night, there were journalists attacked. There were two press buildings in Gaza City, the main city, and they were bombed. One of the buildings collapsed. I think some people were out of the building for some reason, so they escaped being killed. As far as I know, nobody was killed in these attacks, but there were seven injured, and there was one journalist who lost a leg. These buildings were deliberately targeted. Imagine this report, John, and I'll let you jump in on this. Imagine this comment from Israeli officials. In one of the buildings, they were only targeting one floor. How do you bomb a building and target one floor?
Oh, that fits right in with my article, doesn't it?
It is really an absolute outrage and tragedy what's going on, and innocent people are always the ones who suffer most. I've been on this story like a laser, John. I mean, I don't know how anybody cannot at least follow it a little bit, but you can't do it in the U.S. media because they tell you nothing. They distort. They lie. They get the story absolutely backwards. Oh, I could say so much more, but let me let you jump in and talk about what's on your mind.
Well, you know, the article I wrote had, you know, wasn't spurred by what was going on in Gaza, but it certainly fits right in with what's going on in Gaza. My article was provoked by Mitt Romney's comment that, you know, if he were president, he would make America so militarily strong that no one would dare attack us. And I burst out laughing when I heard that. You know, you can't make America, can't make any country so militarily strong that nobody will attack us. I mean, that's an absurd thought to begin with. But, you know, it reminded me of history. You know, wars like the ones that we're engaged in now are not new. And I went back to the 14th century, and the Mongol horde leader Tamerlane, who conquered all of Asia Minor from Mongolia to the Mediterranean and from Russia, you know, to the African, to Africa, and he was notorious for razing the cities he attacked after conquering them and plundering them, and then putting all their people to death, and he even built landmarks out of the skulls of those people. You know, I mean, and it occurred to me that, you know, look, what are we doing? Air war, war from the air, Israel air war, American air war, drones, rockets, I don't care what you call them. There is no way to know who you're going to kill when you use that stuff. And, you know, it's impossible. As you said, it's impossible to target one floor. It's impossible to target a building. I mean, yeah, once in a while that's all you get, but a lot of time you get a lot more. You know, people in airplanes never know who they're killing. People shooting rockets never know who they're killing. People running, you know, guiding drones, you know, by satellite never know who they're killing. It doesn't matter, does it? They don't care who they're killing.
John, you're absolutely right.
The object is just to kill.
You're absolutely right.
That is the only object, to kill. War from the air has no conquest purpose in conquest. You can't hold territory from the air. You know, and if you're going to use an air war, you're doing it merely to punish the people on the ground. That's the only reason for it. It has no strategic military purpose whatsoever. We tried it in Vietnam. It didn't work. You know, we bombed Hanoi thinking that, what, we could destroy their will to fight. Hell, they won the war. And you know, we even tried to eliminate, to bomb a rainforest away. That's how damn dumb we are. You know, we're going to destroy the whole rainforest. Yeah, sure. And of course, it was true in the Second World War too. The air war against Germany, oh, it was very destructive. No question about it. Killed hundreds of thousands of people, but had very little effect on the war on the ground. And it's, you know, when the war was over, the British were so ashamed of what Bomber Command did that they didn't even mention them, you know, at the end of the war. And it took decades before they got around to, you know, honoring those people for their contribution to the war. I mean, that's what air war is. Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Pure punishment. The war was over. The Japan had been beaten. There was no reason to even think about invading Japan. They could have just sat and let them starve to death. You know, no, we had to show them. You don't oppose American hegemony anywhere. If you do, even if you get away with it, we will punish you enormously. And that's what's going on. Israel isn't going to conquer Gaza. It's not going to put troops in there to conquer Gaza, but it's going to punish the dickens out of the people there. And that's all it is. It's sheer retribution for not giving Israeli what it wants. That's all the war is about.
John, you are so right, so right. And you could go back, certainly World War II, the firebombing of Dresden, the firebombing of Tokyo, the nuclear bombs on two cities long after the war was won. Japanese were surrendering or trying to surrender months before Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And all this gratuitous bombing. Yeah, to extract a pound of flesh, and the Nazis did it. The Nazis tried to bomb Britain to submission, not just the London Blitz, but all over the country. It just emboldened the people to want to resist all the more.
Yeah.
As far as the military strategy goes, John, it's absolutely cockeyed. Every time it's tried, it fails dismally. The people just marshal around the government, and whether it's a war or it's something like sanctions that just hammered Iraq in the 1990s, and people literally were practically starving to death and couldn't get medical help because of the sanctions, and the people had only one person to turn to, and that was Saddam for help. For whatever help they could get, they had nobody else to turn to for him, and even if they hated him, they turned to him for help. And the real enemy came from the outside, America and the allies that were enforcing these policies on them. I don't think the Iraqis will ever, the living Iraqis will never forgive America for what it did, and they never should. But this goes on. I'm sure you could go back into antiquity, and you'd see the same thing. Retribution, gratuitous killing, just horrors that go on. So it's not a modern-day sickness. It's a human species sickness, John. There's something wrong with this species. A higher intelligence? I don't think we have a higher intelligence. I think we'll end up the only species in world history that ends up destroying itself.
And the only regret I have right now about that is that there probably won't be anybody around to write about it and make it known for any life that comes later.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. But every other species, they only kill to eat or to defend themselves or their territory or stuff like that. It's all rational. You know, these lower creatures, what they do is rational. And what the human species do is so irrational. So irrational. Killing other people for the sake of killing them? What on earth do you get from that? You know, I mean, even aside from morality and rule of law, just to go around killing people, what kind of a pilot or a drone operator in a drone facility that could be 1,000 miles from a battlefield? I mean, these people they kill almost for sport. It's like playing a video game. They're sitting there in some place. They could be in Las Vegas and they could be killing people in the Middle East, and they don't see them. They just, here's a target, and they're operating multiple screens so they could be shooting at multiple targets, one after another after another after another. They don't, as you say, they have no idea who they're killing. They just do their job. They go home. They go to dinner. They go out to the movies. They go to the ball game. They come back the next day. And what is their job? The job is killing.
Yeah. Okay. And you know that's the way it is. And you know what? The people who make it all possible are honored, educated scientists and technology gurus. You know, Tamerlane had to work hard to raise a city and kill its inhabitants with swords. We don't have to work hard to do it anymore. You know, and we look up to these scientists and you know, we look up to the people who work at the General Dynamics or whatever that company's called. You know, their pictures, names, addresses, phone numbers ought to be on posters. You know, nailed to telephone poles all over the country. There's only one way to stop this, and I've argued this before in some of the things I've written, Stephen. You have to shame these people. But we don't.
They don't shame easily.
Well, but they would, I think, if you posted, you know, mass murderer.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
With their pictures on them all over the place.
Oh, that would be lovely. That way, on billboards too.
You know, it's not hard to do with the internet.
Oh, you can certainly do it online.
You put these posters online that people could print.
Well, I do it all the time. I don't do it pictorially. I'm not too good on computers. I do it in my prose.
Yeah.
And I try to be very professional, but I take no prisoners. I absolutely take no prisoners. I use language like calling the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu what he is. He's a world-class thug. He's a thug.
Yeah, sure.
That's what he is.
Yeah,
and I
you
call
know.
Him that.
And I do things like, you know, I say that the president's name ought to be spelled O-B-O-M-B-A.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what he is. Somebody else mentioned that to me.
I mean, I don't know how to put this, but a long time ago, I was a smoker a long time ago. I'm not anymore, but I was a long time ago. And I used to take smoke breaks with colleagues. And during a smoke break once with a colleague, I said, you know, I'm ashamed to be a member of the human race. He looked at me and said, well, how is that possible? How can you be? I said, well, just look at the horror that this race perpetrates. I am. I'm still ashamed to be a member of this race. Well, I don't understand how people can take killing so nonchalantly. And it's not just the foreign policy killing. I don't know how we can sit around and let kids get killed in their bedrooms in Chicago by drive-by shooting. We don't pay much attention to that. We pay more attention to the two guys that got blown off an oil rig in the Caribbean the other day than we do to all the kids that get killed in Chicago last month. What kind of a people are we? I don't know the answer to that. I was listening to somebody on, I guess it was CNN this morning, and this girl said, "Look, this killing works." And what did she mention? Libya and Somalia. Mm. And I thought to myself, girl, it's way too early to know whether it worked in Libya and Somalia. And she's getting paid to be a pundit on television. What kind of damn world is this? I don't know the answer, Steve.
Stupid, John. Absolutely stupid. Well, Somalia has been a cauldron at least for the last two decades, and I think before that. We're stirring the pot, mainly because of U.S. policy. Goes back at least to the senior Bush administration. Then Clinton inherited it, and, Bush Jr., Obama, and it's still a raging cauldron over there. And Libya is more violent now than it was last year. The so-called government, I wouldn't even call the government in charge of the capital city of Libya, because their parliament has been stormed. If the people in Tripoli, the capital, wanted to, they could take those people out any time, string them up, or shoot them. I mean, I just can't imagine why anybody who really preferred a peaceful environment would want to have anything to do with governing there, let alone living there.
No. Nobody asks themselves, why after Gaddafi's acquiescence in recent decades to so many things that the Western world wanted him to do, did we take him out? We took him out for revenge. That's the only reason. He was not an operator in the terrorist world, or what we call the terrorist world. Why did we take him? We took him out because we had an opportunity. That's all. It was a mafia type assassination. That's all it was.
Yeah, it really was, John. There were a lot of things that they didn't like about Gaddafi, but overall, he cooperated with the West.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He opened up Libya's oil fields to Western development. I mean, he did a lot of things that Western nations liked, but he did some things that they didn't like. He didn't want to be a part of the African Union, the Africa Command that America has, not even based in Africa. He wanted to have a gold dinar. He wanted to supply billions of dollars to help African nations be more independent of Washington and the West. He did things like that, but he did. I've talked about Gaddafi, and I've written plenty about him last year. I mean, he did marvelous things for the Libyan people. They could only dream of having Gaddafi back, but he's gone, and the country really is a raging inferno with violence going on everywhere all the time. And I've written just this year. I've probably written half a dozen times on Libya. Last year, it seemed like I was writing about Libya almost every day, at least a few times a week, just on and on throughout the year. And my publisher put out a book on Libya, edited by Cynthia McKinney, and she contributed to it. She spent time there, and I contributed two chapters to the book, and some other terrific people contributed to the book, including a few who spent time in Libya. I did not. So all I was an observer and a researcher from the outside, but there are other people who were there and saw firsthand the horrors that were going on. And at least one of them I know well, who's been on this program, was lucky to get out alive because he was there once the real violence began, when the so-called rebels, the death squads came storming into Tripoli and other places and took over, and they had attack helicopters shooting people in the street to make it easy for them. They might not have gotten too far if they didn't have an air force. That's what made the difference. That's why Syria is hanging on now, because there are thousands of these death squads running around the country, armed by the West and regional allies and Turkey, and just horrors, absolute horrors. But they don't have an air force so far, and Syria has a stronger military than Gaddafi has. So as long as it stays this way, these death squads will never defeat the Assad government. But I greatly fear that something worse is going to happen, and the whole Middle East could go up, John. And literally, this is the long-term strategy of Washington to knock out one independent country after another, put in pro-Western puppet states. And it doesn't matter how many millions of people they've killed. Since 9/11 alone, America is directly responsible for literally killing millions and millions of people. And if you go back to the 1990s, at least 1.5 million perished under the Iraqi sanctions alone. 1.5 million.
We do the same thing over and over and over again. When we decided to take out the Taliban government in Afghanistan, who did we have do the fighting for us? A bunch of crooked drug pushers who were known as the Northern Alliance, who didn't even like each other, couldn't even get along with each other enough to even, come up with a unified policy. But, because of the territory and others, the Taliban could never take him out. So what did we do? We bombed the dickens out of the Taliban, and the Northern Alliance took over. And we have a government there now that's supposedly American-friendly, but I don't think so. We'll see that when the American troops pull out. We'll see how Afghanistan disintegrates into warlords fighting each other. That's what we did there.
Oh, it's a mess.
That's what we did. That's what we did in Libya, and it'll deteriorate into the same sort of situation. That's what's going to happen in Syria. I mean, we've got all sorts of, warring parties there. The enemy of my enemy is my friend until my enemy is defeated, and then he's my enemy. It's idiotic, so idiotic that it's inconceivable.
Great majority of Syrians support Assad. He had majority support before any of this business began in winter, around February, March 2011. He had majority support. But the support for him is so much greater now because people fear, even people who don't like Assad, and really would like a different type of government, even people who feel that way, want him to survive because they're terrified at what might replace him if the West wins and these terrorist death squads that are running around the country murdering people, they're scared to death wondering what would happen if these kind of people get any kind of power in the country. They know what's going on in Libya, and they see the same thing is going to happen to them, where there'll just be an endless raging cauldron of continued conflict. So they support their government, and they hope somehow they're able to prevail. But who can know? It's once America gets its claws into some country, and this is America's war, absolutely America's war. The other countries are dragged in whether they want to be or not. So you've got a bunch of NATO countries, regional allies, they get involved. But none of this would have happened. None of it. If Washington didn't target Assad for removal, and there can only be one outcome of this, if this just continues endlessly, month after month after month, it could be there'll be an air attack. And if America prevails, the whole country is going to disintegrate and erupt in violence that could go on endlessly for years. I think Israel is worried about this. Israel is not particularly thrilled about Assad, but I think even Israel is scared. If we get rid of this guy, what in the heck is going to be on our doorstep?
Yeah, and the pot is boiling in Jordan too.
Oh, it sure is.
I just say to myself, these people don't have brains. They've got cogs between their ears that only turn one way, you know, and the one way is kill, 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 kill. There's only, given the current Israeli government's attitudes, that situation in Palestine can only ever stop when every single Palestinian is dead. And of course, that's never going to happen. So I say to myself, how many centuries are they going to fight this war? How many centuries is America gonna fund this war? I don't know the answer to that, but that's the only way to end it. There's no way to end it peacefully.
There really isn't, except in one way, John. In one way, I really think that America and Israel both are following the same pattern as previous empires.
No question about it.
Israel is an empire wannabe. And America, of course, has the global reach that Israel may have on a slightly modest scale as a partner with America, but certainly not on its own. Israel has a strong military, but it's a tiny country, small population, about the size of Greater Chicago, something like that.
I ask myself, the American empire is collapsing. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, it really is.
What's going to happen to Israel when the American empire collapses? Doesn't Netanyahu, as I refer to him, ever ask himself that question? Does he, what are we going to do when America collapses?
You know what he thinks about? If that happens, I'll no longer be prime minister, so it's somebody else's problem.
It's the people in Israel's problem. They're the ones who are gonna, take the brunt of this eventually, not Netanyahu. If that country starts to collapse, we'll send some kind of airplane over there to bring him back to Washington and set him up, like we did the deposed people in Vietnam, the president and who are running like small businesses in California now. Or baby Doc in Haiti. Didn't we take him out of there and send him to Spain?
France.
Or, somewhere. But Netanyahu doesn't have to worry. He knows that Americans will, send one of these fancy helicopters in there and get him out of there. And the Israeli people that he's let into this morass. Well, of course, he didn't start leading them into it, but he's led them into this morass. Their skulls will turn white in the sun, and who's ever alive there can build a monument out of them, just like Talleyrand did when he,
It can't happen a moment too soon, John. My feeling is of the two countries, who can know? But my guess would be that Israel will go first. Israel is tiny. I think there are other people who may feel the same way, too. There is such anger around the world on the street against Israel.
Hey, your fat lady singing.
I don't know how a country can sustain this forever and ever and ever, and there are growing numbers of Jews who absolutely deplore what Israel is doing. Israel is shooting itself in the foot every single day, and if they invade Gaza and repeat what they did in 2008-2009, the rage will absolutely be overwhelming, deafening, call it what you will. John, let's take a fast break and we'll come back.
Okay.
welcome back on with John Cozy, talking about the things going on in the world, present and past, that make us both, John, very much suspicious about the human species and how it operates and what it does. And it disturbs me so much. I can't understand. I guess I can understand, but I just can't. I can't fathom in a good sense, a moral way. I'm not quite certain of the adjective that is the right one, but it doesn't compute in my mind that people can act like good parents and good neighbors and give to charity and show up at church, a synagogue, or mosque, or whatever on the regular prayer days or holy days or whatever, and then go to work during the day, and the job really is to create mass misery based on all the policies that they're involved in creating, let alone the people who man the guns and fly the planes and so on and go around killing people. You know, they obey orders, and for my part, they should disobey orders when they're given lawless ones. That actually is U.S. law, and it comes also right out of the handbooks of the U.S. military, that it is illegal to obey an illegal order. An illegal order is one that violates U.S. statute law, the Constitution, or international law. And that rule applies all the way up the line from the lowliest serviceman to the President of the United States to the commanders in the Pentagon. Nobody's excluded. But everybody gets their orders, and they do what they're told to do. And it doesn't matter whether what they're told to do is to go out and kill people, when there's no rhyme or reason for doing it except that they've been ordered to do it, as far as they're concerned. But then the people who write these policies and craft them and decide who will we attack today? What country will we destroy? I mean, they're the real villains, and they can call themselves good citizens. That doesn't compute in my mind.
Oh, it computes in my mind they call themselves good citizens. What doesn't compute in my mind that the rest of us call them good citizens? I mean, that's the thing that I don't know, you know, and it's pervasive in this country. How many policemen in the past year have, when called upon because somebody needed help, ended up killing the guy? And they're good citizens, and they always get off. That's what I don't. I mean, nobody ever says to these guys, you know, a guy, well, it looked like he had a knife and my life was in danger, so I shot him. Hey, you coward. I mean, nobody says that to him. Oh, he's a hero. He's a policeman. He needed to defend his life from a pen knife. You know, I mean, nobody does it. The press doesn't do it. Nobody in government does it. People don't do it. Oh, once in a while, there's a bunch of, you know, there's a demonstration here or whatever. But killing is done so easily in this country and overlooked that it doesn't even, you know, amount to anything more than stubbing one's toe. And how anybody thinks a country like this can endure, lead the world, be a force for good in the world, that's sheer delusion.
John, again, that's so right. And whether it doesn't matter whether we're talking about troops abroad in a foreign war or some kind of conflict, or cops on the street, they literally have a license to kill, and they can kill with impunity. Doesn't matter who. If they do it, they can get away with it. It's very, very unusual for a cop in America who commits cold-blooded murder to be held to account for it.
Yeah.
I've written a fair amount about that, too. Every now stories that come up where innocent people are murdered by the cops, and they get off with it, most a hand slap, and often it's not even that.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, that's one thing. But what I don't understand is that, you know, we don't make fun of big, burly, armored policemen saying, "Oh, we were afraid for our lives." I mean, that's ludicrous. There ought to be cartoons about that all over the place. Every police force in the country ought to be, have to look at cartoons of a big burly policeman stand killing some puny little guy with a penknife and saying, "Oh, I was afraid for my life." I mean, it's the only way you're ever going to get anything done. I mean, the law will always cover it up. The press will always cover it up. You know, one of the things I've harped about in numerous articles is that there, you know, judges in most venues in this country are elected. You know, so a judge, time after time after time again, lets really violent people, you know, out on bond or whatever, you know, probation, whatever, only to have them do the same thing over and over again. And you know what? All of these things are reported in the press. The culprit doing the bad things are reported in the press. He's named or she's named, but the judge is never named. So nobody can say on election day, "Hey, he let all these guys out who did things, you know, bad things over again." That's never mentioned. He's protected. Why? I don't understand that.
It's an ugly system, John, and it goes back to the beginning of the Republic, go back to the end of the 18th century, throughout the 19th century. I mean, the entire history of America is the same kind of stuff. Whether it's beating up on people who can't fight back, in the olden days, the wars were more domestic ones, wiping out the native people in America, literally year after year, endless. There was always a war going on, and it was nearly total extermination, and the war still goes on culturally, and the wars abroad, of course, a separate issue, but same kind of idea, and this stuff is just so ugly. I remember one of the early articles I wrote about a culture of violence. The culture in America is a culture of violence, and it's true at home, it's true abroad, and you can go back to the beginning of U.S. history, and that's exactly the way it is, and it's pretty ugly and disturbing. You know, the image America has, John, the reality is exactly the opposite of the image that America likes to craft for itself. It's just a bunch of hokum.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I wrote a thing, America leading the world headlong into the 18th century. and my piece, that this week's piece that I wrote, we're acting as though we were living in the 14th century, in the 1300s. That's how far Western civilization has progressed. It's progressed into the 14th century. Yeah. That's all there is to it. The only thing that distinguishes American and any Western European foreign policy from Tamerlane's foreign policy of conquest and plunder is the destructiveness of the weapons we use. That's all. There's nothing different about it. I mean, he had people carrying swords, chopping people's heads and arms and stuff, okay? We have bombs that incinerate them. Huh? You got to thank science for that, guys. Your favorite thing. Science is going to save the world. There's not a moral scientist in America, I don't believe. Not a single one. I don't care whether he's a physicist or a chemist who's working for a Dow Chemical. There's not a moral scientist in this country. Not a single one. And people have to realize that and tell it to them. I hope there's some of them listening to this on your radio here.
Oh, I hope so, John. If
the physicists and engineers of this country refused to build drones, there wouldn't be any.
I had a professor my freshman year in college. And I was kind of young. I was still a teenager. I didn't quite understand stuff the way I do today. and freshman chemistry, and I began pre-med, and I decided that medicine wasn't for me. But I had a very famous professor who I didn't appreciate his fame at that time. His name was Louis Fiza. Hope I'm pronouncing it right. And he invented napalm, either himself or with others. Napalm. And I had him in 1952, 1953. I mean, this stuff was used, I guess, in World War II. And napalm is pretty ugly stuff. And, of course, you know, I mean, you put on a suit and you get in front of a class, you look like a normal human being. This guy invented a terror weapon. A terror weapon. How else do you describe it?
Yep.
No morality there, John.
Nope. And you know, and that's the real problem with the human race. We have spent a lot of time learning how to do everything bad, and no time or no money on learning how to do anything good. And it's simple as that. Why is it as simple as that? It's as simple as that because making things that enable us to do bad is a lot more profitable. That's why we do it. That's the free enterprise economic system.
John, it's your truth. There are exceptions. The exceptions prove the rule. There was only one professor I remember, and I had him my sophomore year, 1953, 1954, who really was an exception to the rule. His name was George Wald. Some years later, he won a Nobel Prize in his field. I had him in a natural science course, and he was marvelous. He was absolutely marvelous. If he were alive today, I absolutely would want to have him on my program. And I think he made a statement in class one day. It's the only thing I ever remember from class that I think I can quote verbatim to this day, made either in 1953 or 1954. And he was a glorious human being, and he deplored nuclear power. He knew full well what happened in Japan, and he made the statement was, quote, "There is no such thing as safe nuclear power." And he was absolutely right. There is no such safe thing. Even today, commercial nuclear power plants, if countries want them to be, they can become atom bomb factories because they produce plutonium and I guess other weapons grade material that can be, if a country wants to use it for that purpose, be converted into weapons grade material. Most, I would guess, do not use it for that purpose. A small number do, absolutely. But nuclear power plants, whether or not they use them for that purpose or not, nuclear power plants are fragile. They can break down. You could have meltdowns, and meltdowns can be very, very serious business. That's what happened in Japan. They try to cover it up, but it absolutely happened, and maybe half the country of Japan isn't safe to live in, but nobody wants to talk about it, and the water is so polluted, you can't eat the fish, you can't eat the food that's planted in the ground anywhere near, so many miles from where the accident happened, Fukushima, last year. And this is nuclear power, and whether that was an accident or whether somebody caused it, supposedly a tsunami, I have my doubts whether the tsunami was a natural or man-made. But that aside the point, accidents happen. People are fallible. Nuclear power is very, very dangerous. You can clean up some stuff, but nuclear power is unforgivable, and you irradiate enough places. That stuff stays that way in perpetuity, essentially, for many, many thousands or millions of years. And this is the kind of stuff we play around with. That's what George Wall meant when he said, there's no such safe thing as nuclear power.
Hey, I was reading an article about an abandoned nuclear facility in Lithuania that they want to dismantle, and they can't figure out a safe way to do it. It seems to be impossible. And the implication is that there are nuclear plants like this all over the world. And when countries like Germany and Japan, that recently decided that they're going to abandon nuclear energy, start wondering about how they're going to dismantle these plants, they're going to find out that they can't. And isn't that going to be fun?
That's very scary, John. That is very, very scary.
But look, people are dumb. I mean, we all know that, and I don't know what we can do about it. But anybody who talks about, who's denying global warming, for instance, ought to go pick up an old, 100-year-old physics textbook and read about the laws of conservation of matter and conservation of energy. And they'll soon realize that all you do is you take a carbon-based substance and convert it into other things. You don't destroy it. The energy and the matter is conserved. You convert it into something else. And what we're converting it into is a lot worse than coal or oil. that's grade school stuff. Everybody ought to know that. But of course we don't know that.
And that's only one of the, we talk about nuclear power, global warming. There are so many other ways that we're destroying ourselves besides war. The pollution in the ground from so many sources, the food that's unsafe to eat, the water that's unsafe to drink, the air that's unsafe to breathe. How long can this go on, John, before if we don't go up in a mushroom-shaped cloud, we're going to expire because we simply poisoned ourselves to death?
Yeah, there won't. The means of life won't be here for us to subsist on, and the tragedy of that is that it won't be here. It probably won't be here for any other kind of life either. But if that's the way it is,
the roaches and the bacteria, maybe they can survive. But the birds and the bees and all of the beasts in the field, they'll perish with us. They can't survive. And I think a lot of them have trouble now because the streams are so polluted, so the fish is bad, and the ground is poisoned with all kinds of pollutants. So this is taking a toll on animal life around the world. Lots of things are taking a toll.
Yeah,
but the populations of a lot of these species are going way down.
Yeah, and ours had begun. I mean, the human species is having a hard time with it too. After all, there's starvation and poverty all over the world, and what makes that not as bad as it would really be is the fact that we're killing a lot of people.
Oh, we're killing a lot of people. We absolutely are.
We don't give them a chance to starve to death. We get them before that. I mean, I don't know, Steve. I'm an old man, an old grumpy, grouchy old man. And I say,
realistic, John. Realistic. I mean, you've been around a while. I've been around a while. You see this stuff. You can only take so much before you react to it. I was always upset about the stuff going on, but like most other people, you're occupied in the usual things that that occupy people's lives. And I never dreamed I'd be doing what I'm doing now, and I didn't begin doing it till I was age 70. The only thing I did before this was I used to write letters, and some of them were very long letters, both to friends, occasionally to family, people who were like-minded with me, and once in a while to somebody of some note. I might have read something that they wrote, an article, a couple of times a book, and usually I got an answer to the letters, and my letters were very long, and I used to literally edit my letters, and when I look back at those, I never saved any of them. I didn't save a copy for myself, but when I look back at what I did, those letters were sort of like writing articles before I wrote articles, but I never believed, I never could have dreamed I'd be doing what I'm doing now, but I'm so concerned about the stuff that I see and the harm that's done to so many people, and I say to myself and I say to others that I'm glad I'm not young today because things are so horrible. I don't know what young people have to look forward to.
Same thing that you and I have to look forward to.
Well, they have a lot more years to pass before they get
stage
where we are, John.
I don't think they do.
Well, you may be right.
That, that's a different thing. I don't think they do. I mean, that they think they do, but I don't think they do.
Well, I've written a number of times in articles that, you know, if we set the Middle East on fire, it's only a hair's breadth from starting another global war, and another global war is World War III, and heaven help us if that happens, and nuclear weapons are used, and it's very, very possible that we could see the unthinkable, and that's a nuclear winter. And if anybody hasn't seen the movie On the Beach, came out in the 1950s. I'm not a movie fan, but once in a while on late night TV or whatever, this film shows up. It's an absolute must-see film. I would never recommend a film, but I absolutely would say if you ever see the film On the Beach, watch that film. The cast was marvelous. Fred Astaire was in it, a serious role, no dancing in this film. Gregory Peck, Ava Gardner. It was about the end of the world. That's what the film was about, a nuclear war. And the last scene was absolutely horrific. It'll chill me to the day I die. If you get a chance to see that film, absolutely do it. Everybody should see it. It made an anti-nuclear activist out of Helen Caldicott.
Yeah. I think I told you this once before. And I remember in 1963 telling a college class of mine that the formation of the State of Israel in the Middle East would be the cause of the next world war. And you think that the next world war is around the corner. I think the next world war has already started. I think it's been going on for a number of decades now. It's just that it's hidden from people. And all the killing that's going on surreptitiously is part of the big last world war. And it's already a world war. We're killing people all over the world.
We really
every
are.
Continent, every continent, you know. And we would love to have a way to wipe out the Chinese, I'm sure, you know, or the Russians, you know. And we just don't have a bomb big enough to do it.
Yeah, there are other ways besides shooting and bombing to kill people. You
can
starve them to death.
Yeah.
You can let them get ill but provide no care. And this stuff is going on. Henry Kissinger in 1973, I believe it was, came up with a policy to reduce the world's population by 500 million people by a certain date, maybe around 2000, and then by another million or two or three every year after that. Henry Kissinger, you know, cull the population, get rid of these useless people we don't need, heaven knows what the plans are now we haven't heard about.
We have put people in influential places in government who were not even Americans, who were so incredibly evil that it's hard to understand, you know, why we would have done it. Kissinger, Brzezinski, you know, these are all old warriors. Old balance of power European warriors. And we elevated them to high places in government. And the fat lady is singing, and I'm going to shut up.
I'll let you get off, John, and I'll just say thank you so much again for coming on. We'll pick it up again next month. We're getting into the holiday season. I find no reason for cheer and goodwill. I'd love to see some goodwill around. There certainly isn't any that generated by our government or the Israeli government or all the NATO members and so on. But, John, we'll pick it up next month. And, again, join us. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, our new day instead of Thursdays, and on weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit. If I ever find anything good to talk about, I'll talk about it. I have written a little bit about that. I'll do it again. Thank you, John.